Welcome back. We're back. We were off for the Easter break. We hope you guys had a good time away from your friends and family. And we hope you missed us, man. We're back. It's episode 35. It's Pitch Invasion in your ear. What do you know? And of course, we're dealing with football left, right, and center. I mean, there's a lot to talk about today. But I'm not by myself today. Lwazi is not here, so I'm taking control of the ship. Do not worry. We're still going to be sailing on course to some great football topics, discussions, debates. And of course, I cannot do that without
Emeka Enyadike,
who is second on the log.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll just get that clear. He's always making sure to remind us that Liverpool are on top.
Top of the table, but, you know.
No. You're second now.
Man City are on.
Back down
to
reality.
They're on steroids, you know, so.
They weren't the whole season?
Well, you know, somehow, I don't know. We'll see.
Okay.
You are listening to the Pitch Invasion podcast, the podcast for football travelists.
We have to start locally, and locally, I mean, South Africa, you know, specifically with the APSA Premiership. Now, it's obviously turned out to be a two-horse race between Orlando Pirates and Mamelodi Sundowns. And this is going to the wire. This is really, really going to the wire. And, you know, for those that don't know, of course, Sundowns also still have a pending... That case is still pending, Amika. I mean, with the situation with Orensa and, you know, whether Sundowns are going to be dog points. And I'm hearing rumors that it could be 1 point. I don't know what the official law is. But as things stand, you know, Pirates are on top of the log. And, you know, Sundowns are right behind them. But could you say that, you know, Sundowns still have a chance? Have Pirates wrapped this up?
Pirates look on course. And you know, I've always said that if they kept their nerves through the last couple of games, which they have, I fancy them as being potential champions. Plus, Sundowns have their eyes set on the CAF Champions League, where you know they come with an away goal from the first leg of their semi-finals. If they score just 1-0, they go through to the finals on a chance to add a second star to their shirt. It will seem like it's not over, like they say, but I think that, you know, I'll give Orlando Pirates the advantage, with or without all of the drama around whether Sundowns get docked points or not. And I think that the PSL should have dispensed with that matter a long time ago. Leaving it until this time, it's not very good, because we had an experience last season with Ajax, and I thought that wasn't well handled, because they left it until very late. So, interesting next couple of weeks when we wrap up, but I think Mitchell can't smell blood.
Because, I mean, you look at it now on the table as things stand. Sundowns are a game behind Pirates and 3 points back. Now, you know, obviously we're waiting for the outcome. We don't know if it's going to happen. It might not even happen this season by the looks of it. But, I mean, if they had docked a point or two or three, you know, you're looking at a situation whereby Pirates will only need a point in their next game. And that is crucial. So I think, you know, they've got to find a way to, more so for the fans as well, to give us clarity. Because I'm a Pirates fan, and I'm sitting and I'm thinking, listen, you know, the guys are out there also in limbo and, you know, putting in blood, sweat and tears. And, you know, they're out there for 3 points when maybe they could pull a Bafana and just go for 1 point, you know, and hopefully just secure a point. And, you know, this is going to be interesting now, because you also look at it this way, is that if you decide to dock a point to Sundowns, remember that game involved Sundowns and Wits, do you then award the points to Wits, who then would move to 51 points themselves? So it's interesting that, you know, this situation has all of a sudden thrown Wits back into the mix, because, I mean, they have to be compensated. I mean, they were the team that, you know, this grievance took place, you know, and surely they should be compensated in some way if Sundowns committed, you know, an act against the rules.
I've always believed that if, you know, football rules are there for a purpose, to keep everyone in check. So whenever there's a deliberate violation of the rules, I think that the full punishment should be meted out. And having said that, I think that, you know, there needs to be urgent action in that regard, because leaving it until one or two games to the end, it's not a good thing. And then, you know, maybe they could even say, do it now. And then the teams know what they're playing for. Because, you know, all of this could change. If overnight those points get given to Fitz, and Fitz are back in the conversation, and then anything can happen, because we've seen Pirates even when you expect them to win and then they go and lose. And I've always said that when everyone talks about Sundowns and games in hand, I say, you know, for me, games in hand mean nothing. You've got to win those games.
I mean, Sundowns have proven. I think they drew all three or four of the
exactly.
games in hand.
So, you know, they had the distraction of the Cup Champions League, and, you know, as it looks right now, what we would normally be celebrating as a classic finish to the season with all of those teams in the mix, is being eroded with this sword hanging of whether or not the points will be docked or not.
We had a situation with Bloemfontein Celtic not too long ago, and in their game against Cape Town City, where the game was called off because of crowd violence and trouble in the stands and, you know, inadequate security. And they gave Cape Town City the 3-0 win.
Yes.
Now I'm looking at it and I'm thinking they took 2 weeks to decide this. And 2 weeks to decide a matter that also involves the law. Because remember now, the police involved, people were arrested. So surely a case like this where there's a rule book that says, you know, if you play an ineligible player, this is what the rule says. You know, maybe, you know, we should also do a bit of due diligence ourselves and go look at the rule. And maybe next week we'll discuss it and find out, you know, what the punishment says. But if they took 2 weeks with the Bloemfontein Celtic and Cape Town City situation, this game happened in October last year, I think, right? So we're, what, 9-10 months into it? So this literally has just thrown the league in limbo, because now, like I said, you look at Wits, they're now thinking, hey, listen, you know, if Cape Town City got a 3-0 win for crowd trouble, right, they didn't put 3 goals in, whereas in our game, we probably were prevented from winning because of an ineligible player. Surely we should get these 3 points, which put us back in the mix. And, you know, looking at the log, Pirates are 3 points ahead of Sundowns, and, you know, there's a +4 goal difference ahead of Sundowns. So, essentially, if Pirates win their next game, the league is over.
It's over, yeah.
But
if a point is
Sundowns, you know, are capable of, I mean, if they could put 5 against Al Ahly, you know, if they go down to the last game and if Pirates lose and Sundowns need to win 6-0, for example, I mean, that's highly likely.
They can do that.
So, you know, this situation has really thrown the league into, you know, it's really disrupted the flow of the league, to be honest with you. And, I mean, with 2 games left, well, Sundowns have 3 games left, but, you know, the rest of the pack essentially have 2 games left. I actually don't know when is going to be the right time to actually announce any sanction on Sundowns in terms of, you know, whether they're going to be dog points or what the heck is going on with that situation. But, you know, sticking to Sundowns, I mean, they did well in the CAF Champions League. Yes, they lost, but they got a goal away from home at Wydad Casablanca. And I must say, I need to give Sundowns praise, man, and I need to give them credit, because, you know, I'm looking at a team right now that is slowly, slowly, and possibly changing the culture in South African football as a whole. Because now I think we're getting respect, not only in, you know, Southern Africa, but I think the Northern African
teams, all over Africa.
You know, respect us. Because if you look at the past CAF Champions Leagues, I mean, the Northern African teams, you know, dominated. And now we have Sundowns that can go up north and actually, you know, make a name for themselves and, you know, come back with a result. And I mean, we're at Casablanca, you know, they're recent champions. So we're not talking about a fly-by-night team. And Sundowns actually, you know, hung on there and got the result. So I'd like to get your thoughts, Amik, on what you thought about their result.
It's a good result. My worry is just, you know, sometimes when they're under a lot of pressure, which I would have loved if they played the game first at home. You know, they've struggled when they've needed to get some results. But if they play as good as they did against Al Ahly, then, you know, they're in, I mean, why that would be in for a real hammer in here. And I think that, you know, Sundowns needs to win 1-0. Then first things first, they need to stop Wydad from scoring, which is what Wydad will try and do. They'll try and get a goal so that they put that push pressure on Sundowns. But if Sundowns can prevent them from scoring, and even if they get a 1-0, they just need to get through. And you know, they don't need to get carried away, because these North Africans know what to do if they go away. They come, especially when it's semi-finals and finals, they always have a plan. And Sundowns has got to be careful. We've seen them struggle against Wydad in the past,
yeah,
where they needed maybe to score an extra.
I mean,
goal.
They were in the same group.
Same group. I mean, I'm playing also. They've met them too many times in recent times. It's almost becoming a derby.
And I think, you know, in Sundowns' case, you know, to be fair, I think if you've put five against Al Ahly, you've got to be confident that, you know, the next team coming in, you can at least score two goals. And, you know, should they do that, then, you know, shut the back door, then that's Sundowns through to the Champions League final. And what a story that would be for South African football. I mean, it's not easy to get into a Champions League final, but to get there twice in a space of 3-4 years, I think that's incredible.
I think they've already done well. They already have a story out there. You know, to get to the semi-finals tells you, you know, that this is a good, you know, almost like a golden era for Sundowns, because, you know, we haven't seen South African teams do so well in Africa. Pirates give us a decent run when they got to two back-to-back finals. Mm. Sorry, and then SuperSport United also had a decent run.
Yeah, the Confed final.
Yeah, they had a decent run as well, getting to the final. So overall, I think that if you were to take a snapshot of 5 or 6, almost 7 seasons, you know, with these 3 clubs, mm. you've seen, you know, a phenomenal improvement in how they approach Africa, which is something that Chiefs and Bidvest need to reevaluate their strategy, because you can't be a big club in Africa if you're not competing against those teams. And that's why those teams are able to sign big name players, because when they win this Champions League, they get more sponsorship, they get maybe prize money for CAF is not too much bigger than the prize money you get in the PSL, but the potential for you to get a global audience, because you get to play in the World Club Championship.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, you get more exposure. And, you know, if you look at a team like Kaizer Chiefs that got the blessing of having Lucas Radebe at Leeds and having a whole rock band come out of there with a name, with their name, you know, they can be global. If you look at Pirates with their logo and everything, you know, the more they play in Africa, the more the name goes out and the more they can build their brand. And then Sundowns, you know, they've been in the cooler for a long while, but in the recent times with Pizzo, they've just turn the corner, and, you know, they become one of the feared teams in Africa.
Where do you think, you know, I always remember my dad always telling me, you know, the Swallows of the 1970s, the Chiefs of the 70s, you know, the Pirates of the 80s, you know, and I then start to think, okay, in the context of South African football, in terms of, you know, the greatest teams, obviously I wasn't alive to see those teams in the 70s and, you know, more so the late 80s, but, you know, I remember the teams of the 90s and the mid-2000s, you know, the 90s Chiefs, the 2000s, the late 90s, 2000 Sundowns, obviously the recent Pirates teams. You know, where does that put Sundowns in that picture? You know, could we categorically say that, you know, this Mamelodi Sundowns is possibly the best South African club side of all time?
Well, I mean, if you look at where they are right now, you know, they've got one star. The only other team that has a star is Pirates.
Yeah.
And if, you know, if they do, and don't forget, Sundowns have gotten to the finals before.
Yeah. And I think they've got the most Premier Soccer League PSL title.
They do have that. Yeah. But I'm saying also that they've in Africa they've gotten to the Champions League the Champions League final before.
Yeah.
So it's not like like they have this thing. So, you know, whatever happens this season, they're putting themselves in the equation for
the. Do you think? Because I mean, you know, in our country, you know, we are shackled to the idea that Chiefs and Pirates are, you know, the biggest clubs in the country, and
they are, in terms of,
you know, in terms of numbers and support and everything,
and that's how you
possibly
determine the biggest,
right? Possibly. But now I'm talking about pedigree now, because now I'm looking at Sundowns and I'm thinking to myself, it's hard to deny Sundowns' status as the best South African club side, because now if they get to another CAF Champions League final, right, and if they even win it, I fear as a Pirates fan that Sundowns just elevates to another level that Chiefs might not get back to. I know the numbers in the stadiums, I know Chiefs have a large fan base, there are Chiefs branches everywhere except for trees, and everywhere there's a Chiefs, you know, Chiefs branch, Polokwane, yeah, there, and so forth. I understand Pirates have a star, but if Sundowns get a second star, and on top of that win the league, I think that takes Sundowns to a level that just is unprecedented and unanimous them being the biggest and the best South African club side. And I think it would be hard to deny that, because, you know, when you have two stars in your badge, that says it all.
They will only be...
And it's not like two stars where the first star was one where, you know, the CAF Champions League was, you know, only 10 teams participated. We're talking about in the heat of African football at its peak.
Another star will make them the most successful South African club. It won't make them the biggest club. Orlando Pirates is...
What about the best?
It's 80 years
what
old.
What about the best?
Or thereabouts, I don't know.
What about the best?
Pirates were founded in 1937.
What about the best? Would that make Sundowns the best club? Because, I mean, you being a Liverpool fan, I look at Liverpool and, the younger generation of Liverpool, obviously, you know, if you said Ian Rush, they'd be like, huh? Do you understand what I'm saying? They're more Gerrard and Suarez and now, Coutinho. You know, Coutinho, Salah, Van Dijk. But that era for them, you know, is just non-existent. So they could not embrace themselves in that Kenny Dalglish era to actually understand, you know, how big Liverpool, you know, they are as a club. Never mind were, but still are. And if they win that Premier League title, that sort of obviously revives Liverpool back in that conversation again. But you still can't deny the fact that Liverpool, what's it, five-time European Cup winners, Champions League winners. That's a huge deal.
No, you can't wipe it away. It's like Ajax as well.
Exactly, you can't wipe that away. So now I look at Sundowns and I'm thinking to myself, a second star, surely that takes them right at the top as the best. They might not be the biggest because support and
tradition, history.
You know, tradition.
Orlando Pirates is a team where
you write your own history.
Kaiser played for Orlando Pirates. So did Jomo Sono.
You write your own history.
And then you look at the Chiefs team of the early of the 70s with Ace and all of those players. You had tremendous some of the most iconic players from in South African history, either played for Pirates or Chiefs or Swallows, you know. But yes, to your point, if they do win, they have a stake to be in the best.
The other thing that I think Sundowns have changed more so ever since Patrice took over. You know, it's not all about the money, but I think most kids growing up in South Africa, right? Where do you want to play? Chiefs or Pirates? And I think that has changed now. That's now, you know, Chiefs, Pirates or Sundowns. And I think that's where I'm getting at in terms of Sundowns taking themselves to the top.
They're willing to come back from Europe and, I mean, Matlambi came back from...
And his first destination, Sundowns.
Came back from Egypt and he went to Sundowns.
Let's go back even further. Let's go back a decade. Yeah. Peter Ndlovu.
Yes.
Right? Peter Ndlovu, I think, possibly started that whole, you know, trend of, you know, maybe Sundowns.
That announced the arrival of Patrice at Sundowns.
Yeah. And
changed the equation. Because it's pretty much like how Chelsea evolved from, an average team into
a super team,
Team or Man City.
And until Chelsea won the Champions League, right, that then meant they could get anybody. They could literally get anybody. And that's where I feel Sundowns are at this stage.
Pitch Invasion is the podcast for football tribalists. To contribute to the show, pose a topic of debate, or just complain about your favorite team, send us a WhatsApp voice note on +27 609 216977. That's +27 609 216977. Or send us a text message starting with #PitchInvasion. Remember to follow the Pitch Invasion podcast on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram under the username Pitch Invaded.
We're going to move on from Sundowns and we're going to head over to Liverpool. This is your part of the land. And now, you know, I'm sitting there, I'm looking at the table, and I'm thinking, okay, they're no longer on top. And, you know, with two games to go, I'm not so sure, Amika, that Liverpool can actually win this title, because City seem like they're just really, you know, firing on all cylinders. And they don't seem to be looking like they're going to slow down at any moment. But now, obviously, there's small matter of the Champions League to deal with. Some team called Barcelona. Heard of them?
Well, look, they have to first navigate Barcelona, and then they'll get back to facing Newcastle and Wolves.
Not going to be easy games.
Those two games are going to be very difficult because they've got two very, very good managers who can set up the stall.
One being former Liverpool manager, to try and frustrate them.
However, I think, you know, after watching Liverpool against against Huddersfield on Friday. I was kind of convinced.
You're not gonna compare.
No.
You're not gonna tell me your confidence for the Barca game.
No, I'm not comparing. I'm just saying that the team has hit a level that if they had a few months ago, some of the games they drew, they probably wouldn't have drawn those games. They've gotten to the point now where they've gotten through difficult games where they've had to come back, dig deep to win.
I think Salah getting back on the score sheet.
Yes, they get back to the point where, no, not Salah, because I mean, because you got Mane as well. You got actually moving Jordan Henderson from that defensive role into you know, his more natural position as a box-to-box player has given them a certain kind of, you know, edge. And I think that you know, I'm confident they can win their next two games. I think also with Man City, the games people thought that they were going to lose, maybe drop points sometimes. No, maybe not lose, but maybe drop some points. Tottenham, Man Burnley. United, and even Burnley, people thought that. And then everyone looks at the next two games and thinks Leicester and Brighton, there's no way they'll drop points. You need to just go back to when Man City won their first league title under the new era where Aguero scored in the last minute. That was a neck-to-neck, similar to this when they had with Man United. And it went to the last day. And, you know, the results, somehow the United game finished a bit earlier. And then Aguero scores another goal. So, you know, whilst Man City has the advantage, and I think that if they do win, fair play to them, because I think that, in my opinion, I think they've been phenomenal. They played like champions. They've dug themselves out of very situations, and they've gone 12 games.
But
on a winning road.
I have to stop you a bit there, Amika. But I have to say this as an Arsenal fan, right? You know, Arsenal cop heat for almost any result. You know, a loss, a draw here. If we drop points and so forth, and I'm just trying to imagine if Arsenal had a 7-point lead, where if they'd won that game by Christmas, they would have gone 10 points. And then fast forward to today, they are now second. You would not hear the end of it. And I just don't hear enough criticism of Liverpool and Klopp, to be honest to you. Because at some point, Liverpool had the chance to go 10 points ahead. And 10 points ahead, do the maths, that's 4 games. And I just think there's not enough criticism on Liverpool's part to say, guys, how did you guys mess this up? Where did this all go wrong? Because I'm telling you now, had this had been Man United or had this had been Arsenal, we would not hear the end of it. And I think there's too much of a romantic storyline that people want Liverpool to win for them refusing to give Liverpool heat.
If this was in La Liga
and Barca or Real Madrid were in Liverpool's situation, heads would roll.
No, I don't think so. I think that you're not getting the fact that of where Liverpool have come. You know, this was a team that almost won the league in 2014. The heart of that team was dismantled. Gerrard retired.
Get to 5 Sterling, years later Sterling, now. Sterling, we're in 2019.
No, listen, Sterling,
still the same
Sterling
situation.
Left, Suarez left. You know, so many players. Martin Skrtel, the entire team. The only person remaining from that team, apart from Mignolet on the bench, is Henderson. Because Daniel Sturridge is always on the bench, apart from last Friday. The point that I'm making is that Klopp has come in. He's built that team to the point where they've gotten to Champions League semi-finals back-to-back. This is a team that couldn't get into the Champions League. You know, they've gone to two European Cup finals, which they lost. And sometimes losing those games is not because they're not good enough, but maybe, you know, how would I put it? It's just that one extra step. And if you look at this season as well, the first time Man City, two teams have gotten over 90 points. They worked out that in 117 years, only twice would you not have won the league if you had 90 points. So, you know, people don't realize just how good Man City are. And the fact that Man City...
But Amika, Liverpool had a 7-point gap
Man City,
with a chance
Man
to make
City's,
a 10.
Man City's squad and how much they've
Well, maybe stop spending 70 million on defenders and split it up.
No, it's not that.
35
it's,
on
not,
a,
it's not
on
that.
A defender,
it's not that. Man City gamed the FFP, with the owners being able to throw in deals to try and balance the books. But they've spent more than everybody else, and they have a squad that they can have almost three different lineups. With Liverpool, once they had injuries at a point, there was a time when defensively they had a point where Fabinho was even made to play centre back, and that's when they crashed out of the FA Cup and also
but
lost
then
a few games.
Could you not say this, right? I know, you know, with Arsenal, my club, you know, over the years there's just been talk about, you know, our performance away from home, and that Arsenal away from home just don't have that mental edge to put in a performance or to gear themselves up to do the business away from home. And I'm now looking at Liverpool. You pointed out 2014. You know, there was another season with Torres before that. Now we're at this season. Do Liverpool have the mental state and the mental capacity to handle a title fight?
Liverpool have only lost one game this season.
But they had a point, they had a chance to go set 10 points ahead.
Agreed. I'm just saying that in any other season, they will be champions already. The point is just...
No, but that's not any other season. This is the season.
The point is just that you need to give credit to Man City. Man City, they are...
Is it credit to Man City or should Liverpool be not for not taking advantage?
No. I mean, Man City was like 21 points. The difference between Liverpool and Man United was about 21 points or thereabout. And then how many points gap between them and Liverpool from last season? I mean, look at how it is that they have only 1 point ahead of
but
Liverpool.
But you had the advantage, Jamaica.
You can have the advantage. There was a time Man City was 5 points ahead of Liverpool.
Five is not seven.
No, I agree.
Seven could be ten.
I agree. But
I think there's a huge difference.
But I'm saying that it is not over. So, you know, we can have this conversation when the
season
is over.
But now you had a situation where it's now in other teams' hands, apart from yours.
It still doesn't matter. When you say it's in other teams' hands, you're saying that the teams they're playing against don't have much stake in this equation. If you look at it, I mean, there was a point yesterday where Burnley played like they really have something. You need to understand, teams in this league, the higher up you finish, the more money you earn. You know,
okay, so now let me move to this question now, which we're going to segue into the Champions League. Liverpool now, their best hope of silverware, does it lie in the Premier League or is it still in the Champions
League? They can still win both. I mean, Champions League, they're playing Barcelona over two legs. Who says they're going to win those two games?
And there were two games left in the Premier League. Who says they're going to win those?
So exactly. So the point I'm making is that they are still very much in the conversation for two titles. And do I think they can win both? I think they can. Is it in their hands? They have to just win their games and then see what happens. So, you know, if they do win those two games, you know, Leicester beat Arsenal.
10-man Arsenal, get that right.
Look, when I hear 10-man Arsenal.
10-man Arsenal, get that right.
Leicester beat them. And Leicester is not an easy meet as well. So,
and Leicester, I mean, Brendan Rodgers, why the heck would he want to give Klopp any favors, the guy who replaced him? Why would he want to say, Klopp, I'll put Vardy at right back for you.
I don't think it matters because tomorrow, when Klopp leaves, he might be called back to Liverpool. It has happened before. Kenny Dalglish came back.
But Kenny Dalglish, Brendan Rodgers,
Mourinho went back to Chelsea. So it's possible. I mean, Brendan Rodgers, up until now, has given us probably our best season in a very long way, because that was a very romantic season. So I mean, I give
any more so than this season when you had a 7-point lead.
No, I'm saying that the difference between that Rodgers team and this team is that this team is solid defensively. If we had this defense in 2014, Liverpool would have been champions.
If you had 75 million to spend.
You got to imagine that at the time also they had this silly transfer committee where they were buying players
Degen.
Not about Degen, even going far. They bought
Martin Kelly. Stuart Downing.
They bought Sacco. They bought some players that, you know, they didn't really do their homework.
Jerome Cissé, no, he was in.
If you look at this team, the team now, Mane, Salah, I mean, under Klopp, he got Joel Matip for free. Joel Matip this season has been. People talk about rave about Van Dijk, but Joel Matip, I saw a whole highlights of him playing out of the defense,
including that own goal against what was it where he scored that own goal?
No, I forgot about the own goal. Joel Matip has been phenomenal this season. Joe Gomez, you know, there's been so many players that have really stepped up in terms of value of this Liverpool team today. If they were to sell that team today, they can't sell it for less than the club. They can't sell it for less than $2-3 billion. Pounds. That's how good the team is now in terms of their global fan base, their appeal, the romanticism. What is just missing is silverware. Look, if we don't win,
how many years is it now? 28?
No, it's 29.
29.
Yes. Oof. If we don't win the Premier League and win the Champions League, it adds more.
How many presidents have South Africa had in 29?
No, forget about how many presidents. I forgot about how many presidents. The issue is just simply that, like I said, you know, it's not over until it's over. So I'll keep believing until after May the 12th, then we can have a conversation.
All right. Well, seeing as though you're saying it's not over until it's over, I feel the same way about the top four. And clearly this top four race, you know, I was saying to people, it's possible that this top four race to me is more exciting than the Premier League finish. Because, I mean, you have four teams essentially, you know, battling it out. And every week, you know, they keep handing, you take it. No, it's like a game of hot potato or a game of musical chairs. And Arsenal, for the love of God, have just failed to take advantage. And now we're seeing Man United also doing the same thing. I mean, if Solskjaer won Sunday's game, for goodness sake, I mean, they would be back. They could have even sniffed third.
Listen, but between Arsenal and Man United, both of them had the chance to close those two spaces because they had games, you know. But, you know, I don't know how you can snatch defeat out of victory. You know, I'm learning about that from both Man United and Arsenal, because yesterday they were Arsenal was pathetic.
Chelsea as well. I mean, Chelsea, everybody makes it seem like it's just Arsenal.
No, but I'm saying that the advantage that they both had, and then Tottenham on their own at home. You know, you might say yes, they have the Champions League, which is what I love about Klopp. They asked him and he said,
okay, we've moved on from Klopp.
No, I'm coming. I'm saying something. You know, with Tottenham, the excuse will be like, okay, mate, they've got a Champions League game, so. You know, but I was looking at the Tottenham lineup. It was a strong enough lineup. Then I look at least, I listen to Klopp, and he says, don't ask me about Barcelona. Right now, my focus is Huddersfield, and I've got to do a job. I'll do a job. When I'm done with this, then I start thinking Barcelona. That's the mindset that you need to approach these two titles. I think with Man City, you know, they had they look at their fixture and they had Tottenham. Two Champions League game, and they just assumed that Arsenal will beat them in all of those games. If Tottenham stepped up a bit in that game against Man City, they probably get something out of it. But I don't know if you remember me predicting Tottenham was going to take Man City out.
I do remember that.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm looking at it this way, and I'm thinking, you know, this top four race, essentially, you know, I think Arsenal, you know, when you have to rely on other people's results, you know what the biggest problem is? Is that you have to take care of business then, right? So if the other teams lose, like you wanted, then the onus is on you to take care of business. And Arsenal just haven't taken care of business. The loss against Crystal Palace...
It looks like Leicester might be the ones to determine who finishes the top four.
Yeah, because they've got Chelsea and Man City. So, you know, they still have a saying. And I mean, they played Arsenal on Sunday. And, you know, in Arsenal's case, I think the loss to Leicester, the loss to Crystal Palace, I think was a bigger blow because their away form, let's face it, Arsenal's away form for the last couple of years has been terrible. So if Arsenal had lost to Leicester, even if they had all 11 men, I don't think it would have surprised anybody. But the Crystal Palace result at home, that one was terrible. And especially coming off slaying Napoli away from home, one would have thought that, you know, that was enough to galvanize the guys to at least put in a shift. And I'm looking at Chelsea. They too seem to be just handing this fourth place away. Maybe it could be that it's going to boil down to Arsenal and Chelsea in the Europa League. Because I think in Man United's case, you know, there's something's not right at Man United. I'm not quite sure what. There are talks of Pogba looking at, you know, apparently he's agreed. Well, he hasn't agreed, but he's spoken to the club that he wants to leave to go to Man United. Somebody needs to get will the real David De Gea please stand up? You know, because that's not the David De Gea we know. And, you know, Spurs having lost at home. So something is not right in that top four mix. And it's literally going to go down to the wire. And there are some interesting games coming up. I mean, Arsenal's final game of the season is Burnley away from home. And having seen what Burnley did against Man City and Arsenal's away record, I think the writing's on the wall there. And, I mean, Man United still have I think Man United's last game of the season, it is at home. And I think it's Brighton or Huddersfield, if I'm not mistaken. Man United's last game.
It's Man City playing Brighton in the last game.
So it's Huddersfield at home. Might as well count that as a win.
You never know.
You know, there's it's going to be an interesting finish. But I think, you know, the top four is literally going to boil down to the last game. And I think, you know, and by the way, Chelsea are playing Watford as well. And they, I think their second last game is Watford, and Watford aren't going to be easy. Yes, Man United are playing Cardiff at home. Ah, give me a break. That's an easy 3-pointer. So, you know, that's 3 points for United. And I'm looking at Arsenal, 2 games left. You need a minimum of 4 points. And we're talking Burnley away, and I think it's Huddersfield at home, or Brighton. I think that's who Arsenal are playing, Huddersfield or Brighton at home. That, to me, I can see the 3 points at home, but away from home, I'm not so sure. And I think the top four, well, let me put it to you this way. The teams that are going to qualify for the Champions League, one of them is going to come from the Europa League. I think either Arsenal or Chelsea will have to win the Europa League to get into the Champions League with the way this top four is growing. Because as it stands right now, nobody's giving me any sort of promise or hope that they'll get into the Champions League. But I want to move on to Serie A and La Liga. But I'll start with Serie A, where, you know, they've wrapped up now, Amica, Juventus. And, you know, I was talking to someone not too long ago, and I was saying, you know, when Juventus went out in the Champions League, that part of Juventus' problem in the Champions League lies within the Serie A, simply because there's just not enough competition to get them battle ready for the Champions League. I mean, if you've won, what's it, 8 league titles in a row, that says it all about your league. Do you know what I mean? It's not competitive. Yes, you may be the best team, but I mean, you're winning it by landslide every year. And that's another league title for Cristiano Ronaldo. And, you know, what do you see for Juventus? You know, was this really a wasted year? You know, did they really want another league title, or the Champions League should have been more their focus?
They seem to lack cutting edge in terms of goal scoring, and so adding Ronaldo was going to be the missing link for me. But I think somehow they just haven't been able to take their game, you know, a step further, and they became too reliant on Ronaldo. The other players didn't step up, and that's why, you know, what seemed like something written in the stars with the way Ronaldo was scoring goals for them, you know, blew up in their face against Ajax. You know, however, with regards to the league, I think that, you know, the whole story is about Ronaldo and what he's been able to achieve there, because, you know, Serie A is very difficult, a lot more defensive minded, but he's gotten over 20 goals, or probably 20, I don't know, if
it was 27
the last camp, yeah, so I mean that's a remarkable achievement. And the one thing that I picked out which made sense to me over the weekend was, you know, his 600th career goal as a professional out of 801 games. That's something that I never thought I would see, talk less of, you know, seeing it.
But Gerd Müller's got something.
That's what I'm saying. I'm saying that those are records that Gerd Müller, Pele, and a few players had these records that you look at it and think, no, it's
never
not,
again.
It's inconceivable. But I think that, you know, Ronaldo and Messi have continued to break records. And when you look at them, they don't seem like players that will retire soon.
No,
Ronaldo looks like someone who might finish from here and decide I want to go to Bayern or go to Germany. Because he's when you watch him, you know, he still has pace, he still does a few you know, crazy stuff.
Still play, yeah.
And then Messi as well, when you see him, he's I mean, I saw him playing like he's a robot or something, like he doesn't need to even think or run. So these two guys, you know, I keep saying it, let's stop comparing them, let's just appreciate what they've achieved. It's insane. 600 goals in 801 games. I mean, who does that?
And I mean, speaking about Messi, you know, Barcelona also wrapped up the league title of the weekend. That then makes it 8 in 11 years for Barcelona, and makes it 10 league titles in 15 years for Messi. That's incredible.
It's incredible, yes.
That's incredible.
It gives him, it puts him into every conversation of greatest player of all time. And whilst I'm a little bit old school, and pretty much also because I it took me a long while to accept Pele's pedigree, but I did watch a lot of his, and also went through a lot of his record, and I still think that, you know, let's leave that era where it is, and pack it. You know, those are some achievements that, you know, you can't take in the realm of the human understanding. Yeah. But appreciate where Messi is, You know, he's achieved so much. And I think with all the talent that you see Argentina has, you know, he did take them to the World Cup final. And probably if this, everybody stepped up on that day, maybe he...
Specifically, he
would. Maybe this argument about him winning the World Cup would have been out of the equation. But, you know, I have a feeling that both him and Ronaldo will want to try one more time to win the World Cup in 2022. But let's say leave the World Cup out of it and give them their due credit. These guys have been phenomenal.
Now, just before we wrap it up, I want to talk about the respective leagues here, because, you know, we're looking at Juventus having won 8 straight titles and Barca 8 in the, you know, in the last 11 years. Where do you think the challenge, let's start with Serie A, where do you think Juventus' serious challenge is going to come from? Because I know Napoli have tried to mount some challenge, but, I mean, even with 10 games left in the season, they were already out of the title race.
It's difficult because Napoli, Roma, you know, they've all become selling clubs. You know, if you look at Roma and imagine that Alisson and Salah were sold in the last couple of years.
I think they sold El Shaarawy as well.
Exactly. I'm just saying that the quality of players that they sell, or you look at Napoli, you know, their best player was Jorginho. They sold him. The only club not selling anybody is Juventus, because Juventus keeps competing strongly. Because for Juventus to be able to attract Ronaldo, Ronaldo could have gone to any club anywhere in the league, and there are enough clubs in England that could muster that 100 million. But he obviously didn't want to take on a new challenge, and Juventus appealed to him. So if you look at it, you know, this is one of the reasons why the Premier League has got so much appeal, because Premier League is no respecter of teams. You find, you know, like,
I mean, even in Fergie's height, he didn't win 8 in a row.
No, he didn't. He didn't, and he couldn't, because, you know, he had to contend with Arsene Wenger. Mm-hmm. Arsene Wenger, you know, had some great years. He won the double in 98. He won also in 2002.
Invincible.
And then in 2004, he went, you know, unbeaten the entire season. And then Chelsea came on board and carried on. And then you had Liverpool throwing sand into his eyes with the Champions League win in 2005, which he took Fergie, I think, another three years to try and salvage some of it. But, you know, with Germany, it's also become like Bayern.
Dortmund have just they've handed it back to Bayern.
Even when Klopp was there, with how strong Klopp was as a character, Bayern still bought their best players. You know, so you know, if you try and weigh every single one of them, you understand why the Premier League is what it is.
And I mean, you look at Serie A now, and you know, for over the last, you know, dare say decade, it's been, you know, that Atletico Madrid, Real Madrid, Barcelona challenging for the title. And I think, you know, what's sad is that, you know, Valencia at some point were in the mix. I mean, there was a Chinese consortium that came and took over, and, you know, they had a galaxy of stars. I mean, there was a David Silva, Juan Mata, David Villa, Jordi Alba, all in one team at Valencia. And, you know, they mounted a serious threat for the title. And it they've just
but
disappeared on the face
but,
of
but, but I mean, the most people are in the business for two reasons. The first reason is to make money, and the second reason is to try and win trophies. The era where a lot of those clubs lived on the glory of, you know, we win title from year to year. You got to go back to how Nottingham Forest won the league and then won the Champions Cup then, as it was known, back to back in 79 and 80. You got to look at Aston Villa winning the league in 82. You got to look at Wimbledon romantic FA Cup winning in 88. The more you look at those things, or AC Milan when Berlusconi came on board and they became the dominant team in Europe, you know, back then it was about, I'm bringing the money so we get the honors. Now, football has become more and more of an industry. So the investors are coming in and taking a look and say, okay, look, we're trying to keep it up to a certain level. And then, you know, I mean, look at how much money Liverpool made from selling Suarez and Coutinho and in fact, I'm even going too far, Southampton.
Yeah.
You know, they were celebrating surviving the Premier League. That is because their model has been about being able to produce young, exciting players, and then just take a look at how many players Southampton has sold in the last number of years, starting with Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain.
Yeah.
You know? And then they've had so many players, you know, that they've sold. Lallana, you know, before you even talk about Van Dijk, Lovren, sold a lot to Liverpool. If you add all of them together, that's a lot of money. So you put it on one corner, it's revenue. And then what are they spending money on? How much did they get Van Dijk from and Wanyama from Celtic?
Bag of peanuts.
10,000 or whatever. Yeah. And they sold them off.
For about a combined 90 odd million.
Yeah, Luke Shaw. Was
that's 130 came out of just team, those players
came out of their team and they sold them. So that's the world we live in. And then you look at the Real Madrid model, which Juventus tried to copy with signing Ronaldo, which is okay, we spend a lot of money on the player, but then we maximize the returns in terms of, you know, getting 50% of his image rights, getting more fans. Barcelona's got 100,000 seater capacity, and I got a call from, you know, one of my clients in Europe saying they want to get tickets. So I out of the Barcelona Liverpool game, and I called 8 people that I know can do it. And
excuse you know, us.
The last request, that ticket is going for actually the cover price of the ticket is about 117, because I remember Liverpool fans complaining that, and Man U fans before, how they raised the price of the tickets, and they're going to try and keep theirs low for the second leg. Now here's the story: the last I got on Saturday was €900 for the ticket to the game. That's what happens when you build your team to that level. When I went in 2015 to watch Real Madrid and against Juventus in the semi-finals, after picking up my ticket, I had 3 Russians and 2 other guys from Turkey offering me 1,000 to 1,500 euros.
And you turned it down?
I turned it down, yes, because, I mean, I don't travel. You don't travel 15 hours from South Africa to Madrid only to sell your ticket.
Well, you could come back 15 hours later and buy a car. I mean, that's 14,000 amigos, so you could have done that. It's a fair exchange, you know?
Yeah, I'll think about it next time.
Yeah. Well, that's all we have time for in this show. And when we're back, which will be episode 36, we will know essentially who's got one foot in the Champions League final, either Liverpool, Barcelona, or Ajax and Tottenham. And I think it's going to be an interesting semi-final lineup in the Champions League. I think, you know, we could have potentially that dream run that Porto had when they, you know, slayed giants along the way and eventually won the Champions League. Or you could have one of those finals where Barcelona or Liverpool run into a final where they'll end up winning 3-4, 5-0 like the AC Milans of back in the day. So it's going to be interesting. And obviously a lot of PSL football in the week as well. You know, Sundowns could find themselves, you know, out of the title race, and Pirates could find themselves champions without even kicking a ball. So there's a lot to look forward to up until we meet again. But as for episode 35, that's all we have for you today. And I'm Xola Makwaza.
Emeka Eyereke, I'm hoping to be back on top of the table.
No, they won't. See you.
All right.